専用のペアの人たちだけ。
Next case is State versus MDS L. Again, next case is State versus MDS L.Bishop, Chief Judge Moore, welcome Judge Welch. My name is Lauren Marchaluca. I'm here from South Bluff, and I represent the defendants and appellants in this case, Amadeus. And I would also acknowledge Amadeus, who is watching right now, I think, from his home in Denver, Colorado. We're asking this court to please find that the district court abused its discretion in not granting my motion to transfer this case to juvenile court.I have two reasons, but they're essentially so interrelated that they're basically one reason, which is broken in two, that the court did not take into consideration 2017 legislative changes to the juvenile justice structure. And relating to that, the only 43-276 factors that the district court found that supported requiring jurisdiction, retaining jurisdiction,were those factors that presume the guilt of the juvenile. And this is a case, this is one of those rare cases in which guilt ought not to be presumed. In 2017, our legislature undertook an enormous effort of time and testimony and analysis to try to rethink what the Nebraska juvenile justice system really ought to be. The senator that drove this overhaul, Senator Crist, had made a number of statements that I included in our brief here,about what his vision was and what, as it turned out, the other senators and professionals from many other disciplines agreed upon. That our system ought to underscore the idea that the juvenile system aimed at rehabilitation as opposed to being aimed at punitive sanctions. He observed that processing youth with the adult court results in worse outcomes not only for the juvenile but also for community safety.And at the end, in his support for the legislation that provided for this very immediate appeal, this type of immediate appeal, what Senator Crist had noted was that the conservation of time for this expedited appeal is critical when it comes to teenage years and the possibility of rehabilitation. This overarching emphasis that we should be looking for reasons to not lock juveniles up to find rehabilitation for them instead of looking for reasons to put them away.
Well, but wasn't the emphasis to get to the question of transfer sooner as opposed to after the case has been fully tried and there's been a finding of guilt?
For this, for the statute that enabled the expedited appeal, yes, you're right, Chief Judge Moore. Overall, the idea was that we need to be looking at our juvenile system more with possibilities, with a sense of possibility for rehabilitation.
But the factors in terms of determining a transfer motion weren't changed at all?
Not much. There were some minor tweaks to it, but not an awful lot in terms of the factors that were included.
And it still left the discretion of the district court to...consider those factors, weigh those factors, and make the decision. So what is your, you know how hard it is with an abuse of discretion standard for you.
I do. So it's hard for you,
right? What is your best argument in this case that the court abused its discretion?
I'm going to answer this question, I think, by comparing the four cases involving 43-276 that have come out this year since these legislative changes to Amadeus' case.
Well, Lisa, you haven't agreed?
No, but no, it would have been nice for me to include those, but I think I submitted my brief before any of them came out, so I got excused for this. We have two cases from the Nebraska Supreme Court and two cases from this court. The Supreme Court's cases are State versus Hunt, which came out, I think, just maybe last week, and Stephen S., in re Stephen S. This court in 2018 decided Vidales, V-I-D-A-L-E-S,and Limling, B-L-I-M-L-I-N-G. And these cases have a couple of factors that differentiate them from Amadeus' case in a way that when you take these, the newer rehabilitation focused emphasis into account, I think provide a way to distinguish those cases and to get me past that abuse of discretion hurdle that is so difficult to overcome. The factors that differentiate those cases from other cases are twofold. Number one, in those cases you had facts in the record that showed that those juveniles had seriously failed juvenile probation and failed the juvenile system already. They had histories of violence, they had histories of cutting off electronic monitoring devices, they had histories of serious antisocial behavior, which contrasts with what you have with Amadeus, who has one case in juvenile court of obstruction of a peace officer or a misdemeanor, and doesn't have the rest of that long history of antisocial behavior. The other factor, and this is the one that, that's just been sticking my craw, is that in those cases, guilt could fairly be presumed. In those cases, you either had admissions by the juveniles, for example, the Blue Lane case, where there was a juvenile who had aimed his car at a kid for breaking his golf club and afterwards said, yeah, I did it and I'm glad, or something remorseful to that effect. And similarly, in the Hunt case and in the Stephen S. case, you had essentially admissions. In the Vidalis case, you had a young lady who admitted that she put a robbery together. She pulled back at the end when she was asked to identify her co-workers in this robbery, but guilt could reasonably and fairly be presumed. This is the first case that I've seen that's come up since those juveniles, since those 2017 changes, in which it really is not appropriate to presume guilt, and thus to put as much weight on those guilt-presumptive factors that appear in 43-76. This is a case in which Amadeus has, not only has he not had these colossal failures of prior efforts of treatment, but in which there is a strong argument and we are resisting the presumption of guilt all the way. And what the district court had written here, the district court had found that when you look at the non-guilt presumptive factors of 43-276, there was plenty of evidence that this was a kid who was amenable to treatment and that treatment would be helpful for him. But when we got to the guilt presumptive factors, here's what he wrote. He wrote that the serious nature of the charges, which allege that the defendant killed Johnny Frodis intentionally, without premeditation, but with a deadly weapon, require this court to conclude that the safety of the public and the necessity of confining the defendant in a secure facility well beyond the age of 19 will be required if he is convicted. Now, by that reasoning, transfer to a juvenile court ought never be allowed for a kid who is charged with homicide. But our legislature hasn't done that. And even in this most recent opportunity to overhaul the system, they did not put in any kind of proviso that would say, if you're charged with homicide, you're not eligible for transfer to juvenile court.
Are you aware of any other states that might provide that limitation for juvenile transfer?
No homicide, yes. Essentially. No, there is one state that I have made note to talk about here because it has an interesting presumption in its process for deciding whether to put a kid in juvenile court. That's Minnesota. Minnesota actually has in its process it says that you should presume the guilt of the juvenile for purposes of deciding whether to put this kid in juvenile court or retain jurisdiction in adult court. Minnesota actually has this, and we don't. We do leave it up to the discretion of the trial court, as long as that discretion is not abused. But in this case, Amadeus has presented this court with a strong reason to question guilt. For example, he didn't know Johnny Frattis, the man who was killed. The two so-called adults who were in this house had a documented history of violence with Johnny Frattis. That's one fact that's significant. The fact that the two adults in the house lied to the police investigators is significant, and perhaps most significant of all, it's the fact that literally minutes after Johnny Frattis was stabbed 7 times in the heart and in the lung, Amadeus was seen on video, this is on our record, was seen on video in a convenience store wearing a white t-shirt with no blood on him. This is a case in which we presented a strong case for acquittal at the juvenile transfer hearing. And thus for the court to be predicating its decision on the nature of the charges where there's such a strong argument against guilt. For the court to be doing that is not an evidence-based reason, and that's what 43-76 really asks for, is evidence-based reasoning.
It seems to me that the court was very concerned about if he is
found guilty of this rather serious crime, that the juvenile court would only have jurisdiction for a couple more years. And so there, you know, unfortunately, I don't think that has changed in the legislative session. And so, given that the court system would be limited in the amount of time to potentially rehabilitate someone from this type of crime, that seemed to be a concern that the court had. And it seemed to be legitimate in light of the evidence regarding what YRPC could offer versus the youth correction facility.
I agree in part, Judge Fisher. Because once again, we're focusing on evidence-based decision-making. The criminal history and psychological makeup evidence that was in this record here shows that this is a kid who would be amenable to that kind of treatment. He is not impulsive. And the fact that another year has now gone by, and this kid hasn't screwed up again since then, would suggest that he doesn't have impulsive issues, that his pattern is to withdraw and submit, not to engage and fight. And so this is a case in which that would, in which the court's concerns are legitimate, but the evidence still supports going to juvenile court. I want to throw in one more case that is not in my brief that I have no excuse for not putting in my brief if I can before I slither away from here. And it's Moon versus State. This is a case of the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, and your citation is 451 Southwest 3rd, 28. It's a 2014 case in which the appellate court found an abuse of discretion on the part of the juvenile court that concluded that the welfare of the community required criminal proceedings as opposed to juvenile proceedings just based on the nature of the charges. Evidence-based versus nature of the charges. That's my best argument, my strongest argument for sending this case back with instruction to go to juvenile court. Thank you for hearing my arguments.
Thank you
very much.
Good morning. Please support. I'm Sarah Marfisi, and I represent the state of Nebraska. We're here today on appellant's interlocutory appeal for the denial of his motion to transfer his criminal case to juvenile court. The state submits that the district court's order is supported by appropriate evidence in the record, and we therefore ask this court to affirm. I'd like to begin by commenting briefly on the 2017 changes to the juvenile transfer statutes. As appellant's brief notes that this was one of the first cases since the 2017 changes became effective. However, since those cases became effective, this court has decided State v. Blumling and State v. Udallis. The Nebraska Supreme Court has decided that in right interest of Stephen S. State v. Hunt, the appellant mentioned, is actually a pre-17 changes case. But regardless, all of these cases show that the substance of an ALP here is the same. 2017 LB 11, which is the 2017 bill, only adds the procedural mechanism for interlocutory appeal. It does not add the change in substantive analysis, the factors, or the abuse of discretion factor standard for this case. Moving to the substantive analysis, the heart of this case is the standard of review on appeal. The Nebraska Supreme Court held in State v. Goodwin, and this court recently reiterated in State v. Goodwin, there is no abuse of discretion for the district court's basis for obtaining jurisdiction over a juvenile is supported by evidence in the record.
What about in this case where the district court judge said that the primary factor in which it was basing its decision was public safety, and yet allowed this juvenile out on bond and in fact reduced his bond and allowed him to return to his home state, and the record would reflect that there's been no issues?
That's true, Your Honor. This juvenile is out on bond. However, the district court's concerns about public safety were based on specific concerns with this homicide and facts related to this case. It's not simply a finding that no homicide can be moved to district court. The district court specifically considered that this case involved six penetrating stab wounds to the heart and lung, that these were not defensive in nature.
Well, there's no question that there was a violent act that resulted in a death. But given that the court said the primary basis is public safety, but yet released this young man to return to Colorado. And given that the record shows he's back in his Boys and Girls Club, he's doing what he used to do, there have been no events of any problem, that Colorado has not imposed GPS or ankle monitoring on him, given that that's in our record, isn't that something the court needed to way more significantly in light of its finding on public safety?
No, Your Honor, because at this juncture, this is not the point for to argue that he is actually innocent. The district court necessarily had to presume some of these factors. You know, presuming that he were to be convicted, then the district court needs to carefully consider violence, etc. Bond is a different consideration, and note that appellant in this case waived the preliminary hearing. That appears in the transcript in this case. The preliminary hearing would be the place to argue that there's so much, you know, so little evidence of guilt that we need not proceed to trial. We're past that stage. We've not yet reached the trial where his innocence or guilt will be determined. Bond is a separate matter. So here, the issue is simply considering these factors, which consider specifics of this crime. This is not a felony homicide situation where there's little individual guilt.
Why not expect the legislature then just to say, look, violent crimes don't qualify for transfer? They didn't do that, though.
No, because they left this decision to the district court to consider all of the factors. Some of those factors are public safety and the circumstances of this particular homicide, the violence involved in it.
But as opposing counsel indicated, the court appears to be relying largely on a presumption of guilt with regard to this violent crime, as opposed to weighing factors specific to this juvenile. The ability to be rehabilitated, what is the criminal history involved, what his psychological evaluations reveal. I mean, this record is fairly significant in terms of information evidence related to this particular juvenile.
Yes, Your Honor. However, the evidence related to this particular crime is also evidence that relates to this juvenile to the extent that he will only ever be punished in federal court if he's convicted.
But isn't the whole idea of weighing all these factors to also consider the rehabilitative needs and potential of the juvenile? Otherwise, as I said earlier, why not just exclude homicide, for example, from the list of, you know, of being able to be considered for transfer?
Well, in this case, the district court did carefully consider rehabilitation.
And actually found that was favorable for this juvenile.
Well, he found it both ways. He found that, you know, the psychologist testified that general, it would be beneficial to the juvenile to be treated in a facility. However, when looking specifically at the evidence of the treatment options available in Nebraska's juvenile court system to these rehabilitation and treatment center party, found significant limitations and actually found that as far as the type of treatment that he would be amenable to, he would be more amenable to treatment at the Nebraska Correctional Facility through the district court.
Which is a problem with our laws and our services, not necessarily with this juvenile.
Well, it may be a problem with the laws and the services. However, the district court is left with the evidence in this record about the services available to this juvenile. And the evidence in this record shows that there are significant limitations to the Youth Rehabilitation Treatment Center's ability to treat him.
For example, I think there was evidence in the record that if this would occur in Colorado, for example, the juvenile system there would have had jurisdiction to mandate services until the age of 21.
Yes, Your Honor. However, the records show that he would not be able to be transferred to those services in Colorado unless he were sentenced to probation. And therefore, that's an issue for the legislature perhaps to address, to have more extensive services. But even the type of treatment that he was amenable to weighed toward the district court deciding that they needed to retain jurisdiction in this case. And as this court and the Nebraska Supreme Court have held, the court does not need to resolve every factor against the juvenile in order to retain jurisdiction. And there are no weighted factors that are prescribed more or less weight. Therefore, because the evidence in the record supports the district court's determination, there's not an abuse of discretion in this case.
In your review of the record, are there any factors specific to this juvenile, but not related to the crime itself, but to this juvenile, that were adverse to a finding of transfer?
Yes, Your Honor. First, I don't believe that it's possible to separate the crime from this juvenile, because this juvenile is accused of committing this crime. Now, you can separate the juvenile from the general crime of homicide, the charge. However, you can't separate this juvenile from the allegations that he stabbed his friend 6 times to death over a video game,
which we don't know. This is the problem, right? It hasn't been a long story appeal because there is no conviction yet. He's presumed innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, but the legislation provides for that by
COVID. They provide for that, exactly.
Well, the factors are phrased in terms of, for instance, the violence factor asks the juvenile court to look at the violence that is included in this offense. Therefore, you're looking at the offense, the facts of the offense. You don't know whether he's innocent or guilty, but you must presume guilt to some degree. Innocence can be argued at the preliminary hearing, later at trial.
Would you agree it's problematic that now that we have this interlocutory appeal and can't know guilt or innocence at this point, it is a bit problematic in terms of applying those factors. We are having to presume guilt.
Perhaps that's what the court is being asked to do, however, I don't believe that that's problematic. The district court is being asked to look down the road that, you know, with certain about conditions, which court system would be able to best treat this juvenile. It's necessarily somewhat speculative, and that's why the discretion is given to the district court to look at this broad range of all of these factors and make the best judgment that it can at this stage, given these factors.
In fairness to the district court, it's in the same pickle, right?
Yes,
that it has to make a presumption of guilt in order to apply these factors, and the legislature did not make any alteration to that when it provided for this interlocutory appeal.
That's true, Your Honor. However, the law has not substantively changed since there's an interlocutory appeal, and the district court's analysis has not changed, even though interlocutory appeals are new, so this court is looking at it on appeal for the first time. The district court had to make this decision previously without knowing whether the defendant was guilty or innocent. Simply had to look at the factors, the circumstances of the crime, how they would need to protect the public from someone who is convicted of these specific crimes. But if there's no further questions, because
thank you.
The record shows no abuse of discretion, we ask this court to affirm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, and I believe we're coming out of time. Thank you both very much. The matter is submitted. And with that, we are adjourned.